Good morning to you all. If you're visiting with us, we want you to know that we are extremely happy to have you to come and spend this time together with us. Also, if you're visiting, we want you to know that our regular ministers are gone today. They're on vacation. We're so pleased that they can take some time away, get the much needed rest that everyone deserves now and then, and to spend some time with their families. Before we begin our lesson this morning, as you all know, our focus this year is on unity. And I want to say just a word or two about why your elders and leaders have decided to take a look at that. We want to look at unity not because we feel that there's a lot of friction and discord among our family. In fact, I believe for a congregation this size, we have as much unity as anyone around. But there's always little things that we can do to enhance the unity that we have and make things even better. And although we enjoy a great deal of love and fellowship at this time, what's going to happen when we are twice this size? The more people we have, the easier it is for there to be harmony and friction. So if we start now by understanding what allows us to be unified and what can help us maintain that unity, as we grow larger and larger, perhaps we can keep that oneness that God expects us to have as a congregation. To get us thinking about what I want to convey to you this morning, in a moment I'm going to ask you to do something that might seem a little weird. Some of you won't have any problems with it at all. Some of the rest of us may feel a little uncomfortable, but just go with me on this for a little while, and hopefully it will help us to get into what our lesson is about. In a minute, I'm going to ask you just to close your eyes for 30 seconds. Now, I'm not going to try to hypnotize you or anything like that. I just want you to close your eyes for about 30 seconds. I will watch the clock and I'll tell you when it's time to open your eyes, okay? All right, let's begin right now. Close your eyes for me, please. Okay, open your eyes. Now, I don't know, but I am going to guess what you were thinking when your eyes were closed. Some of you at least were thinking, why is Bob doing this? Now, get right. Others were thinking, when is he going to stop? And perhaps, I don't feel real comfortable doing this. Suppose for a minute, though, I had asked you to close your eyes for 5 minutes. What do you think you would be thinking about if we sat here together with your eyes closed for 5 minutes? I'm going to guess. This is pure speculation. Probably some of us will be thinking, after we thought about what's he doing, this, I'm uncomfortable with this, but here I am. Is my family going to eat at Mazio's today? Are we going to go to Charlie's Chicken? Are we going to go to Brahms? Some of the mothers may be thinking, I've got lunch prepared. Once we get home, all I got to do is whip up a quick salad and we're ready to go. Some, after a minute or two, may think, I've already got my eyes closed. Already got a head start on my nap. I'm just going to slide right into that sucker and sleep for the rest of the morning. Others might think, I can't keep my eyes closed much longer. I don't know what my child is doing, and I need to find out. And eventually, during that 5 minutes, we might get around to, well, here I am in the church building with my eyes closed. Usually, when I'm in the church building and I close my eyes, I'm praying. I might as well spend this time praying. And I need to thank God for all the good things that He's done for me. He's blessed my family. We have great health. We had a health problem, but my prayer was answered, and now we have that problem no more. I have a good job. I'm not like some of those who've been laid off and lost their jobs due to the downfall of the economy. I'm thankful for our unity. I'm thankful for this family. And we go on and just thank God for all the good things that He's given us. Maybe that's probably what a lot of us at least will be thinking. But what if we close our eyes, not for 30 seconds or 5 minutes, but for 15 minutes? Sat here together, eyes closed for 15 minutes. Then what do you think you would eventually think about? After 5 minutes have passed, we're thanking God, but I'm already in the prayer mode. While I'm praying, I need to ask God to help all of those people in our church family and around that I know that need His help. And so we've got our prayer list. We've got those in our minds that we think about often. We pray about them. I'm going to pray for those people. God needs to help them, and I know He's willing to. They need His help. I'm just going to ask God to do that. And by the way, I need to thank God for our country. But boy, our country has some problems. I need to pray that all of this uncertainty about where we're going go away. Give us some leaders who are godly leaders. Because I know there's just so much unrighteousness out there in the world. And it seems to be promoting itself. And it's growing and growing. Wonder what God thinks about all of those people who are just way off the charts. And we sat there for a while, and maybe God's looking down at them, and he's got to be disappointed. Wow, I wonder what He thinks about me when He looks down at my life. Is He disappointed with me? And we get to thinking about us, and are we doing things to please God? Eventually, maybe after 10, 12, 15 minutes, eventually we'll get around, I think, to looking deep within ourselves at what's going on with our spiritual life. But why does it take us that long? Why not 10 seconds pass? We're thinking, let me look inside how God's looking at me. What do I need to do to make my life right with Him? Part of the reason is because what's deep within our heart is usually something a lot of times we don't want to talk about. In 1 Corinthians 14, Paul talks about the secret things of the heart. And what's deep within my heart is called secret because they're secret. I don't want anyone knowing what's in there, and I don't really like looking at it myself very often. But also, it's hard for us to think spiritual things because there is so much information coming into our brain through our five senses. We are driven. Man is driven by what he feels, what he hears, what he tastes, what he smells, what he sees, and what his wife tells him to do. Nope, that's six things. Scratch that last one. Those five senses have been created so they just pour information into our brain to be processed. But most of the time, they're not used to help us focus on spiritual things deep within the heart. A study done by Dr. L. D. Rosenblum and his associates said that 83% of the information that goes into our brains comes from sight. Maybe that's why when we do pray, we just automatically close our eyes because we want to stop that flow of information so we can have a better chance on thinking about spiritual things. And if you think about it, there's just tons and tons of stuff flowing into our brains continually during our waking hours. Take any hour of the day. While we're working, we're busy, we're thinking, we don't have time to do anything but try to take care of what we are responsible for doing. But suppose our day is over. We leave work. Let's think for a moment about all the stuff that's flowing into our brain. Are we still on? Oh. Got it. See, something about the sense of hearing stopped the flow of information. So after work, you leave the building, you get in your car. The car is hot, steering wheel is hot, the seat is hot. That sense of feel is telling you this is very uncomfortable. You start down the street, you go a few blocks, and there's a policeman sitting there. Your eyes focus on the policeman. Am I speeding? I'm okay so far. A few more blocks down the street, someone pulls out in front of you. Without looking, you have to hit your brakes, you react, you respond, and you have a few unkind thoughts going through your mind, but you put them aside, and you still focus on driving. Later on, you're going down the road, and you see something dead in the road. It's a dead squirrel. No, it's a cat. Nope, it's a dog. No, it's a possum. No, it's a skunk. And then so and the smell. Oh, it was a skunk. How much longer is that smell going to stay in my car? I didn't hit him, but it's still strong enough. It's going to be with me for a while. You pass the filling station. Oop, gas popped up another dime today. Do I need gas? Nope, still got a half a tank. I'm fine. There's a grocery store. Do I need anything? Do I need bread? Do I need milk? Do I need butter? Do I need something for home? I'm okay. Finally, you pull in your driveway and the men see the yard. Oh, my grass needs to be mowed. Need to get after that. But I can't because the mower's not running. I need to call Joe Richardson, find out if he can help me get my mower going. You get into the house, open the door, and the puppy dog comes and greets you. He's happy to see you, and you're thinking, did the kids let him go outside like he needs to go outside? You notice his bowl of water is empty. You put water in his bowl. You go in the house. One of the children comes to meet you and says, Mommy, I need to be at ball practice in an hour and 10 minutes. My uniform is dirty, needs to be washed and dried. And what are we having for supper? Oh, yeah, we got to fix supper. And so you go into the kitchen. You notice there's a couple dishes in the sink that didn't get in the dishwasher this morning like you intended to put them. You go into the cupboard to open the cupboard to get something for supper. And you know, all those silly ants are back again. There they are. What am I going to do to it? It goes on like that for hours. When are you going to have time to stop and think about what's deep inside me that needs to be fixed? It's not going to happen until something changes. David, I think, had the answer in Psalms 4:4. He says, in your anger, do not sin. But when you are up on your beds, search your heart and be still. David knows, just like we know, our daily activity is just filled up. But when there's something bothering us in our mind, when there's, and the interpretation of that first part of that verse is kind of varied. But as I look at it, and from all the different angles, it seems to be when something's bothering you, don't do the wrong thing, don't sin. But when you're up on your bed at night, after all the kids have gone to bed, and everything is out of the way, and you're sitting there, laying there quietly, he says, search your heart. One version says, commune with your heart. And that word search, there's about 15 or 20 different words that help describe it. And the best I can get from that, it simply means you look at your heart seven ways from Sunday. Every way you possibly can, you take a look, dig down in there, and you see what needs to be addressed. Linda and I were visiting her sister in Phoenix a couple weeks ago, and in Phoenix they have scorpions, but their scorpions are smaller than ours, only about an inch long, but boy, are they powerful. She got stung by one, and it was 4 hours before that sting stopped hurting. And her neighbor who lives next door is one of those snowbirds. She goes away in the summertime and comes back in the wintertime. And last fall, when she was getting ready to come back, she called Linda's sister and said, "Will you go over to my house?" She's kind of paranoid about scorpions anyway. "Would you go over there and see if you can find any scorpions?" So Linda's sister takes her black light, goes through the house, looks under all the things, under the furniture, under the bed, in the closet, in the corners, searching to see if she can find any of those nasty little creatures. I think that's the kind of search process that David's talking about here. You need some time to look and find out what's going on so you can fix it and not sin in the process. Have some time to shut out all the information that's flowing in from those five senses and meditate on what God sees in us so that we can fix it. But some of us may be tempted to say, "I don't need to do no looking at my heart. I'm smart enough to know if there's something wrong with me, I'll just fix it and go on." You know, Christ had a way of dealing with those kind of people. You know, that kind of attitude reminds me of the scribes and the Pharisees. Those people who knew it all, they were in charge of religious matters, they were the elite, and they took it upon themselves to make the laws and point out the faults of anybody who wasn't following them. And remember in the John the 8th chapter when they brought to Jesus this woman who they'd caught in adultery? You know the story. And they asked Jesus, "What are we going to do with her? The law says we need to stone her." And then you know they were trying to put Jesus in an uncomfortable and tricky situation. And Jesus just stood down or squatted down and started right on the ground. And they kept at, "What are you going to do? What did you do?" Finally, Jesus stood up and he said, "Well, let those of you who don't have any sins throw the first rock, first stone." And then he stooped back down and started writing in the ground. And he wrote in the ground. And he wrote in the ground. What do you think those people were thinking? "What's Jesus doing that for? When's he going to quit? This is making me uncomfortable. Why didn't he say something?" Oh yeah, he did say something. He said, "Let him who casts the first stone who doesn't have any sins, let him be the first one to do that." I can't throw that first stone because although I'm far more righteous than most, people are going to know I'm not completely sinless. But my sins aren't as bad as that woman. She committed adultery, and boy, that's really bad. And if you take all of my sins and pile them up, they're not as bad as hers. Although, I do have sins. And I wonder if God sees her one sin worse than all of my sins. And as they begin to think about it and contemplate that challenge that Christ placed before them, they finally said, "I think I'll just go home." Now, what happened there? Jesus was able to get them to look at themselves and to look at another person from a different perspective, in a different point of view. He was able to get them to do something they didn't want to do, and that is to look deep inside at their spiritual self and see if there's any little nasty critters in there that need to be removed. Jesus is pretty good about getting people to change their perspective of things. This is a widow's mite. It's just a little bitty 5 or 6-sided copper coin. Remember how as he sat in the temple and watched people put in their contributions, he really kind of changed the perspective of what that thing was all about. As he watched the rich people put in lots of money, he saw a widow put in 2 mites. And he says to his disciples, she's put in more than all of the rest. Well, that's a different way of looking at things, isn't it? He wanted them to understand we need to see things like God sees things. And it could change our attitude about what's going on around us with us and others. So those of you who may be on fixed income and you feel bad, I can only put in so much money in the contribution plate. Maybe you need to change your perspective. You're putting in from a little. And God says, that can be a lot. And those of us who have good jobs are very proud of our contribution because we're putting in more than most people are. Maybe we need to think a minute, well, wait a minute. That may not be so much after all from God's perspective. So God is able to just sometimes help us tune out all of these inputs from our 5 senses and think about things that really matter. Sometimes it's simply a matter of looking to see what's really out there. It's already there. We're just not looking at it. And we're not seeing that our perspective needs to be corrected. Let me give you an example. We have a guy working for us at the office. We're going to call him John, because that's what his name is. There ain't nobody else like John. John is one of a kind. He's one of those people supposedly with a really high IQ. And he wants you to think he knows everything. And you know he doesn't, because sometimes he's talking about things that you know more about than he does, and he's saying things that just ain't true. But he wants to leave that impression. But you gotta feel sorry for John because of just all that he's gone through in life. John's wife left him 20, 25 years ago, mainly because he's just John, and that's just the way he is. He's one of the kind of people that's kind of obnoxious. John's got horrible health problems. He's got heart problems. He's got diabetes that's really bad. His eyes are very, very poor, and he has to take shots in his eyes just to be able to see, and there's some doubt from month to month if he's going to be able to maintain what little sight that he has. He has no family except one brother that's alive. He had 2 cats that he really liked, but they both died. And John has some good traits. I just haven't found them yet, but I know he does. Some things he does do well, and I do appreciate. But he's just one of those kind of people that always just kind of makes you feel a little bit on edge about his overall being. So in the last 6 months or so, Linda and I both have caught him at his desk, and he's surfing the internet. Here he is on my payroll, and he's surfing the internet. And so I spoke to him about that, and his office is such, it's got a big picture window on one side, and I can walk into the office next to his, and he doesn't see that I'm there. And so I can spy on him anytime I want to. And so after warning him 2 or 3 times, John, stay off the internet. You know, I'm not paying you to sit here and play with the computer. You know, get the work done. Well, recently I caught him again, and I threatened him. I said, John, if I catch you one more time, I'm firing you. Well, he hasn't done that anymore. But 2 or 3 weeks ago, I noticed him sitting at his desk. He fell asleep. So I walked home and left him, and come back a few minutes later, and he was working. Two or three times later, I'd go in, and he was asleep at his desk. And so about the fourth time, I walked in, he was there, and I got to thinking, all right, he's asleep. What am I going to do? Do I take a picture of him so that when I give him his final paycheck, I say, here's why I'm firing you? Or should I do something else? And so I decided, no, I'll just wake him up. So I walked in beside him, and I put my hands just right up against his ear. And as loud as I could, I went... His head popped up, his eyes flew open, and he looked at me like, what happened? What's going on? And I could see this startled look. It was really strange. And he said, what happened? I said, well, John, I just saw you asleep at your desk, and I thought I'd wake you up. In fact, I've caught you asleep 3 or 4 or 5 times recently. And his look even became stranger. And he said, well, you know, a couple of times I found myself waking up and not knowing what's going on. He said, I better talk to my doctor about this. He'll want to know. And suddenly I began to think about things a little differently. And he did. He called his doctor, and the next day the doctor changed his medicine, and he hasn't had a problem with that since. Now, if I had thought about that long enough, I would have maybe assumed that the reason he was falling asleep wasn't because he was being lazy, but because there's a medical condition. It was there all the time. I just didn't see it. There's a lot of situations out there where things are different from what we see, because we're only taking in the stuff from our five senses and not processing the information that may be in our minds already to determine what's really going on. So as we look at searching deep inside of us, we have to realize it's not going to be an easy thing for us to do, because it's just so hard for us to find the time to be quiet and to be peaceful. But we've got to put ourselves sometimes in that right position. And Linda woke up the other morning, it's been 3 or 4 weeks ago. She woke up and she says, do you see that light in the mirror? What are you talking about? There, on the bevel of our mirror, we have had that mirror for 20 years, maybe more. And there's a bevel that goes all the way around the mirror. And just as she was raising her head, she could see some bright lights right up and down that bevel. She had never seen them before, and neither had I. And so I got over to where she was, and I put my head there, and sure enough, there was some real pretty blues and greens and yellows and orange and all the way down there. And I can go back today, and I can put my head in it, and I can see them there, right there, from the sun coming in the window. All this time it was there, but we've never seen it. Just got to get your mind or your body or whatever in the right position sometimes to see what's there. And to see what's in here sometimes, it takes a little effort to get in the position to see what's going on. Although this isn't a lesson on unity, you know, there's some applications here that can be made about unity. When we think about Christ stooping down and writing in the ground and the challenge that he made to the scribes and the Pharisees who had tried to trap him, was there any unity that took place there? Not really, but you know what? That friction and that desire to be antagonistic kind of went away. Poof. It really kind of took the wind out of their sail and diffused their desire to try to attack Jesus in a tricky way. But the interesting thing is, you know, if those people who are so hypocritical and so unrighteous have the ability to see things in the right light, maybe we can also. When we are looking things at the right perspective, from the right point of view, and we understand each other more, we're less likely to be critical. And we're more prone to not only put away those critical thoughts, but to be helpful. I want to help. What can I do to help this person do better? So, it's going to be hard to find some time, but be aware of situations where there may be other people trying to help you because they love you, kind of like Nathan did with David. David couldn't see his sin with Bathsheba, but Nathan kind of gave him this little illustration, kind of caught David off guard, but it put him in the right light where he could see his sin. Sometimes we need to be open to what our friends are subtly saying to us, maybe trying to help us along. We all need tweaking. It's not easy. It's not pleasant to dig down deep and see what's there that needs to be tweaking, but it's necessary. And we can all help each other in that process. And then we will see things as God sees them. That's the whole trick. If you're this morning and you're looking maybe at your life in a way that you shouldn't, maybe if you need help in seeing yourself as God sees you, we'd invite you to come and let us help you as we stand and sing.
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with Him within the narrow road? Would you have Him bear your burden, carry all your load? Let Him have His way.